The Russia-Ukraine situation would be enough to fill a week's worth of analysis, but the Middle East is demanding equal attention on at least three simultaneous vectors. Let's start with Yemen. Houthi forces struck targets linked to Saudi energy operations, wounding 73 people and forcing a halt to operations at the affected sites. This is part of an ongoing Houthi campaign that has been running for years now. But the scale and precision of these strikes continues to evolve.
The Saudi dimension here is critical because it reintroduces oil market risk at a moment when global energy markets are already jittery from the Ukraine conflict. Saudi Aramco operations being disrupted, even temporarily, sends a signal to futures traders that the Persian Gulf's energy infrastructure is not as insulated from regional conflict as it might appear. The 73 wounded is the human toll. The secondary effect is market uncertainty amplified across oil-importing economies worldwide.
The Houthi campaign has proven remarkably durable despite years of Saudi airstrikes and international pressure. They've adapted their drone and missile technology. They've demonstrated the ability to hit targets at considerable range, and they've shown political staying power that most analysts underestimated in 2023. The question now is whether the strikes on Saudi energy infrastructure represent an escalation in ambition or simply continued harassment at a higher intensity.
Meanwhile, in Gaza, 7 people were killed by Israeli strikes within a 24-hour window, even as a ceasefire agreement nominally remains in place. The phrase ceasefire in name only has been applied to this situation so frequently that it has almost lost meaning. But the operational reality is that strikes continue, casualties accumulate, and the diplomatic framework holding the ceasefire together looks increasingly tenuous.
The humanitarian situation in Gaza remains acute, and the political dimensions of this for the United States are complex. The Biden administration spent enormous political capital on negotiating the original ceasefire framework. The Trump administration inherited it and is now watching it fray without a clear strategy for reinforcement. 7 deaths in 24 hours during a nominal ceasefire is not a ceasefire. It's a lower intensity conflict operating under a different label.
Then there's the Iran dimension, which connects back to the Yemen situation and has its own distinct character. The Trump administration has been conducting what senior officials call a pressure campaign against Iranian interests, military operations, sanctions, and interdictions. But both Trump and Vice President Vance have conspicuously refused to use the word war to describe it. Iran has now responded by calling the U.S. campaign overt aggression, which is a legally meaningful term in international law, distinct from war but carrying its own diplomatic weight.
The refusal to call it a war is politically calculated. War triggers specific constitutional questions about congressional authorization, it triggers specific treaty obligations, and it triggers domestic political consequences that the administration is clearly trying to avoid. But Tehran's framing of it as overt aggression is their way of saying, "We see what you're doing, we're naming it for the international record, and we reserve the right to respond accordingly." That's not diplomatic noise, it's a formal posture being adopted for international and domestic consumption in Iran.
And then Senator Rick Scott declared Turkey not our friend after the Treasury Department sanctioned a Turkish bank for financial activity connected to Iran. Turkey is a NATO member. Calling a NATO ally not our friend is not a throwaway line. It reflects genuine tension within the alliance over Turkey's economic relationships with sanctioned states, its increasingly independent foreign policy posture under Erdogan, and the question of whether NATO membership still carries the alignment commitments it was designed to enforce.
The Scott comment will be dismissed by some as political rhetoric, but it actually tracks a real deterioration in the U.S.-Turkey relationship that has been building for years. If Turkish banks are facilitating Iranian sanctions evasion, that's not just a bilateral irritant, it potentially undermines the entire sanctions architecture the U.S. has built against Tehran. That's a structural problem, not a personality clash.